Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Menopause is coming and the men have all left town, but I'm not giving up until I see that baby crown. 39 and single, can someone help me out? He could be bald and bearded, short or tall, funny, smart, love basketball, from gay to straight, black to white, tiny eyes with an underbite, I just need Sperm Cast.
Hey everybody, you ready to find out if I'm pregnant or not? Well, I'm not going to keep you in suspense for too long. First, let me just say I did great during my 2-week wait. I was happy, healthy, not thinking about whether or not I was pregnant. People weren't asking me all the time, and I wasn't having symptoms, like I said last week, so there weren't constant reminders that I may or may not have a bun in the oven. Of all of my 8 2-week waits, this one was the least awful. As you might remember from last week, I told myself I wasn't going to test, that I was going to wait until I started spotting or got my period. But I forgot that as long as I was still on progesterone, I wouldn't get my period. So I emailed Nurse Julie on Thursday, and she said I had to come in and get a blood test at the office on Friday, 13 days past IUI, one day early, but this blood test would give me the results. But I didn't want to know the results. Anyway, I went into Dr. Kalin's office on Friday morning and I ran into my friend Hannah again. You remember Hannah. I interviewed her in the car outside Dr. Kalin's office a few episodes ago. She was there for a follow-up and we met after our appointments for a quick catch-up in the car.
Hi, Hannah.
Hi, Molly. Fancy meeting you here.
Just ran into Hannah at the doctor's. I was there for my blood test. She was there for a follow-up. So I didn't want to come here today. And she was about to do the blood test, but then she's like, do you have to go to the bathroom? And I was like, no. She's like, okay, well, you're going to have to do a pee test. And I was like, no, I had to do a pee test. Long story short, nothing. I did the pee test. And
oh, so it's like you already got the result.
I was expecting to wait for that awful phone call at 5 p.m.
Yeah.
So that took the, I mean, it's still day 13, yeah. Not 14, but uh-huh. It's like we would have wanted to see something.
Yeah.
So there's still a chance, but it's not likely. So that's where I'm at.
Ugh, oh. I'm sorry.
Aw.
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Sucks. Yeah. Hey, I got medication that I'm going to give you for IVF.
Oh, that's right.
Ease the pain a little bit.
Since Hannah just went through IVF, she's got leftover medications, which can cost up to $6 million. I mean, $1,000. And she says she's going to give me some. I'm going to buy them from you, Hannah, though. I mean, for a discounted price, of course, but I'm going to pay you.
So what drugs did you take for the retrieval?
Menopur, Follistem. I took some human growth hormone this time. That was the difference. I didn't take that the first time.
HGH.
Uh-huh.
And what does that do?
He said it's more likely to get more normal embryos since we only got one the first time and we got 5 this time, so.
How do they know that? What does that mean? I mean, I hate simplified doctor answers, you know what I mean?
I know.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So you've some Menopur left.
Mm-hmm. And I have a little bit of Follistem left. That I did dose correctly, but I had extra.
Extra.
Yeah.
So I wonder how, I guess I would just like find out how much of everything that you have exactly and then get the remainder from
a drug
company. okay.
So like now that my septum is removed.
Yes. What's your plan now?
Okay,
tell the listeners you got your septum removed.
I got my septum removed a few days ago.
If you've forgotten, Hannah did IVF.
The first half
of IVF, then she had a septum in her uterus and it was just removed.
Yeah, so it was bigger than they expected.
Oh.
So he wants me to get another HSG to make sure that it's gone as much as possible.
Okay.
But he just showed me pictures. It was crazy. It looked like a nose. It looked like you were, like, looking up at a nose.
Oh, my God.
It was big. Yeah, so that's
So they
nuts.
Went in there with a camera. So
they went in there with a camera, and then there's, like, a little attachment to the camera that has scissors.
Oh, my God.
The thing is, honestly, I have zero pain from the procedure.
Wow.
Because all that tissue, like, none of it has blood nerve flow. Endings. It has no nerve, so I feel fine.
Wow.
Yeah, the hardest thing, like, I had a sore throat and sore chest from the being intubated.
Yes.
Other than that,
okay,
I'm fine. Like, I went back to work 2 days later.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
So then HSG, so you didn't make a plan for your...
No, so he said, I'm going to call him on the first day of my period, which is, like, next week.
Okay.
And we're going to get scheduled another HSG and then also, like, start the process towards implantation.
Okay.
So I got to call J-Run, too.
What does that process look like? Do you know?
I don't really know. It's like... I know kind of from other people that it's progesterone. I know some people do the injections, some people do
the suppositories,
oh, okay. Some people do a mix. So we haven't discussed any of that yet. I did learn that Steve is good at the butt injections.
Hell yeah. Oh my gosh.
He did a great job on the trigger shot, so he's ready.
Felt a little too good.
He was like, I gave it to you in the butt, and he didn't even feel it. Wait. So we're prepared for that. Yeah, so we'll be implanting next month.
Oh, my gosh.
That's exciting. Yeah, so
that's exciting.
Definitely exciting.
Well, if I start IVF, then I'll be right behind you.
Yeah.
Yeah, so what I'm trying to figure out is mm-hmm. if to start or not, because there's that Baby Quest grant.
Right.
And if I'm in the middle of IVF when they're making their decisions, then I miss, like, they're not going to give it me the grant at that moment.
Right, right.
Because they need to know if I'm pregnant or not, basically. So what do people do? Wait and not do anything while they're waiting for their answers?
It's so hard.
Doesn't make sense to me.
Yeah.
I think I just should just do it.
Just do the IVF or just do the waiting?
Just do the IVF.
I think so, too.
I'm getting old. I'm fucking 41.
You're amazing.
I just turned 41. It's so, so crazy.
It's crazy. But, like, I can't believe a year has passed. But, yeah, I think you should just do it.
Yeah.
And, like, if it doesn't work by then you'll have the grant.
But then I won't be eligible because I might be in out of the window might have been weird. You know what I mean?
Because you might still, like, not be sure where you're at. But yours is going to go fast. Because you're going to have a good egg retrieval. You're not going to have to do it multiple times like I did because you have great follicles to begin with. So you'll
Thank
be able
you.
To... I always hear that 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 when it counts them. So I think you'll have a really good count.
Mm-hmm.
And then you can implant right away. You don't have to wait like we did.
But he wants me to do PGS testing, though.
Oh, yeah. So you have to wait a little.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So there's, like, well, how long is that? 2 weeks.
2 weeks.
So then...
So it's like a 2-month process for you.
Exactly. Yeah. And so they make their decisions at the end of October.
I see. So it's really just...
Right in the wrong
timing
time.
Timing really couldn't be worse.
Yeah.
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 I think you just go for your baby.
Yeah, I can't wait.
Mm-mm.
Do you want to continue this over coffee?
Whatever, no,
you don't have
work.
Time. I'm so sorry.
No worries.
My fucking selfish bitch looking for content.
Good.
Goodbye. Okay, so as you heard, I got that negative P test, but there's still a tiny sliver of hope that the blood test will pick up some HCG that the urine test wasn't sensitive enough to catch. And I'll find out at the end of the day. And you'll find out at the end of the episode. So from there, I headed straight to the Erio's office for my interview with today's guest. Jessica.
Hi.
What's your last name? Kavanaugh?
Kavanaugh, yeah.
That's a familiar name. They're like, oh,
Brett Kavanaugh. That was such a bad week for me, guys.
I'm sure. Spells it different, though.
Yes, thank
you have
God.
You spell it with a C.
I spell it with a C and no U.
Oh, thank God.
It's a totally different name, then.
Totally different.
When Jessica's son was very little, he was diagnosed with autism. Now, almost 20 years later, Jessica's written a play about her experience with autism and motherhood and the resiliency of human nature. Jessica, you've written a play that did very well in Texas, yes?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, in Dallas.
And now you have moved it over here to mm-hmm. LA. Can you tell us, well, what the play is about?
Yes. So I have a son who's about to turn 20. He's on the spectrum. And when he was 12, he started, well, no, when he was like 7, Nope, when he was like six. He started being very self-injurious. He would hurt himself a lot. And it just grew and grew to the point where, like, he pulled his own tooth out in the middle of the night.
Oh, no.
Yeah, it's no fun. And so we just realized, like, okay, so we're not keeping him safe as much as a parent would want to. So we ended up having to admit him, my ex-husband and I, we were divorced at this time, to a group home and, like, a school where he could finally get, like, back in this, at this time, insurance didn't pay for ABA therapy for autism,
which is like the recommended
applied behavioral analysis therapy, which is just like the recommended course of action now. But when Elijah was young, it still wasn't included in a lot of insurance. And so it was like $100 an hour. And they're supposed to get 8 hours a day. And we were like this little musician and actor. And we're like, yeah, cool. So he just wasn't getting the treatment that he needed. So anyway, we admitted him. He's great now. This is the great news. He's like thriving. He went from having like meltdowns like for 2 hours, 4 times a day, like so a whole day, to like one meltdown a month. Is wow. where we're at now. Yeah. So it was the best thing ever. But at the time when it happened, I lost my mind. I was just like, okay, so failed at everything, failed at mom, failed at all of it, and really struggled with depression. And it was kind of either write this play or I don't know. Like it just kind of came pouring out as just therapy. So I just like, I sat down and I didn't know what it was going to be. And I was just like, I need to write. And so I just wrote about, this sounds so terrible. I wrote about like the worst day I could remember with him. It's like, I wanted to exorcise it out of me. And that's the first scene of the play. Oh. So it kind of lays the groundwork for like who these people are and what they're dealing with. And it's intense. Like the first scene of the play is hard. It's hard. It's a lot of violence from a child and all this kind of stuff. But then it skips ahead, and the play is basically about Summer, the central character, who's based-ish on me but not me, dealing with learning to forgive herself and move on from this and deal with the emotional aftermath of what a parent goes through when they feel like they failed their child. So it's that about
so
guilt.
Hard.
Yeah. But mostly it's a comedy.
That's a shocking turn of events. But I love it.
Yeah. Well, it's just, I can't, I'm not going to sit up there for 2 hours and be like, everything sucks. Like,
well,
that's just not a story.
To.
Like, yeah. And plus, that's how, I don't know how else to get through life.
How does anybody function? Like, I'm just always thinking about how in TV there's just like, all this sad stuff, but like when people are going through sad things, they joke about them and make fun and like keep each other happy.
Yeah. And the whole like, oh, I'm writing a comedy or I'm writing a drama or whatever. It's like, that's not life. Life is all of it at once sometimes. And so that's kind of what the play is. Like there's a lot of really hilarious stuff. And then there's stuff that's like so hard to watch.
Yeah.
But it seems to be people are liking it.
Yeah.
Like, I think a lot of people deal with guilt on many different things. And I think that's what people are connecting with.
Absolutely.
Which is cool.
So how long have you been doing the play? How long did you do it in Texas?
We just had a regular run. It was like 4 weeks in Dallas. And it did really well. And we ended up picking up a producer who wanted to do an equity showcase in New York for 3 weeks to see kind of what interest we could gauge there. Mm-hmm. So we did that.
Cool.
In the spring, and we did find some interested parties, and one of those interested parties was Joe Mantegna and his wife Arlene. And Joe, whose daughter is 32 and on the spectrum, was very, very keen from the very beginning. And so then I met Joe and Arlene, and we still thought we were gearing for like New York. I don't know. But I met them in the lobby of a show, and Arlene took my hand and she was like, don't bring the show to New York, bring it to LA and Joey will help you. And I was like, you just called Joe Mantegna Joey. And I'm totally doing that. Like, so that's really how we ended up in LA.
Do they live out here?
They do. They live
and
here.
That's why.
And Theater 68 is who's going to produce it.
Okay. Where is it?
It's at Theater 68 in
NoHo. That's what you just said.
It is. But it's okay.
I just did that for emphasis.
It's on Lancashire in NoHo. And I am looking for the street number. It's 5112 Lancashire.
Yeah. 91601.
Say it again, Amanda.
5112 Lancashire Boulevard, North Hollywood, California, 91601. But I'm assuming people can buy tickets online.
They totally can.
And what's it called?
It's called Self-Injurious Behavior. There's a double meaning.
And where do people find that?
SibOnStage.com. So it's S-I-B as in boy, onstage.com. And then
great.
You can get tickets there.
Autism Works Now. Mm-hmm. They are sponsoring the show?
We are doing a charity component of the tickets. And so they are getting a percentage of the tickets, as well as the Ed Asner Family Center.
So what is Autism Works Now? Can you tell us about that?
Yeah. Autism Works Now is really cool. They help people on the spectrum who are of an age to start entering the workforce and need to start supporting themselves. Mm. They help them find jobs. And wow. they help prepare them for jobs, like job training, and they offer classes, and then they try to place people
wow.
in jobs. And so Autism Works Now will be working. They'll be our front of house. They'll be handing out programs, and they're paid hourly for their work. I just want everyone to know they're not volunteering. and they'll be serving.
Oh, you mean the people that are giving out your playbills and stuff?
Yeah, they're members of Autism Works Now. So they're participants in Autism okay. Works Now. They're on the spectrum. And they have a business called Glorious Pies. And mm-hmm. I think they bring it to festivals and fairs and things like that. And they're bringing that. And so intermission, we're going to have pie.
Oh, cool.
So they'll serve coffee and pie and stuff during intermission.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah. And we met some of them the other day. They're really rad. Like, it's just a really cool organization. And my son, being that he's about to turn 20, like, yeah. I've thought a lot about, you know, like, all the focus that's on children with autism and ending autism and all of that, which is, of course, it's important. But we have an entire generation of people that are grown-ups for yeah. a long time. So, like, helping them learn to support themselves or helping them find the right fit for them is so important.
Yeah. I mean, I have a lot of questions about autism for you, or not about it in general, but your experience. But I guess it's a fear of mine because I have a niece with autism, mm-hmm. and I know how hard it was on my brother and his wife when they realized that this was their reality.
Yeah.
I worry. Of course, I would love any child that I end up having. It's just as a single person raising a child, I won't have as much support. Mm-hmm. So tell me, like, what was it when you first noticed something was different?
Mm-hmm. Well, this is when Elijah was pretty much a typically functioning baby. Mm-hmm. He was progressing as he should. He was making eye contact. He was laughing. He was starting to babble and all of that good stuff. Or he was babbling a lot. And I just want to preface this with, I am not an anti-vaxxer. Mm-hmm. I'm not. Mm-hmm. I vaccinate your children for the love of God. however, what happened with us, and maybe it was a coincidence, but it freaked me the hell out forever. We took him for his MMR, which is the big year, the 1 year thing. Mm-hmm. And that's the measles, mumps, rubella. And he got very sick. He had a fever, which they tell you will happen. It's like, no big deal, no big deal. Mm-hmm. And within a week, he wasn't looking at us. And I was so tired from having a sick baby that I was like, whatever, he's whatever. And my mother-in-law came to town and she hadn't seen him for a couple months. And she immediately was like, what's going on with Elijah? And I was like, oh, he's been sick or whatever. And she's like, no, there's something wrong. And I was so irritated. I was like, get off my grill. Like, go away. He's fine. Mm-hmm. He's fine. Don't freak me out. But then we started paying attention and it was like, oh yeah, what's going on? And they won't diagnose them, you know, that early, obviously. Mm-hmm. But we knew, like, I just started reading and started realizing, whoa, these are some signs that are typical signs. So by the time he had the official diagnosis, we knew.
And how long was it till they gave you an official diagnosis? Probably
three
years old. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
And at that time, did they offer any early intervention stuff?
Yes, they did. Uh-huh. Yeah, there was early childhood intervention. ECI was like this program in Texas where we were entitled to a speech therapist, an occupational therapist. They came to the house like twice a week. Mm-hmm. It just isn't enough for that. Yeah. You know, it just isn't enough. So, yeah. But it was enough for us to at least start learning about, you know, what was going on with him. And at this point, it was just different. You know, 20 years ago, there was just way less information and support, and even the online community, what, you know, the internet wasn't what it is. So it was scary, you know, we just didn't know what was going on. And looking back, the whole like vaccine, he got all the rest of his vaccines. Looking back, I don't know how I feel about the way that went down. There are so many stories of kids that around that age, something happens. Mm-hmm. And so it may just be this like total coincidence. But also notably, the U.S. health people,
World Health Organization.
I don't know the FDA.
Oh,
God,
FDA. Yeah,
them. Mm-hmm. They took off the shelves many of the MMR vaccines the very next month.
Okay,
and said they were removing the mercury.
Okay.
That we no longer would have that.
Okay.
And so that's notable too. But it's still like, it's so confusing for me.
Because
I see the anti-vaxxers online and I'm like, that's obviously not the answer. Like we have vaccines for a damn reason. But I just know what I saw. And so it's hard to vaccinate your kids. Okay. So it's a weird subject for me. So like you're already, if you're a parent dealing with that, you're already like so guilty. Like, what did I do? What did I eat? Where did I go? What did I put in my kid's body? Like it's, you're starting off with an autism diagnosis feeling like, crap, is this my fault? Like,
right.
It's a wonderful way to begin relationship with your child.
Yeah. And it doesn't help with your relationship with your marriage, I'm sure. I remember a friend who is a therapist telling me that 70% or 75% of parents of children with autism get divorced.
4 out of 5.
Oh, okay. There you go.
The statistic.
There you go.
Isn't that crazy?
Yeah.
I actually just learned that the other day. I was like, well, I feel less bad about that then.
Yeah.
Yeah. We definitely, we just coped in very different ways with the diagnosis. We were a well-matched couple too, you know, like we were pretty good together, but we just went to two different places when this happened, you know?
And there's, what are the directions you can go and just like put everything you can into trying to make that child, like make sure that baby's going to be okay, or sort of just
hide in a corner and cry.
Yes.
Well, he was a musician and he traveled all the time. And so he was gone like 85% of the time from the time Elijah was like two to when we separated.
Wow.
So he would be gone and then he'd come back and it would, he'd be back for like 6 days and barely be able to cope with what was in the house. And then he'd leave. And so I would desperately hope for some help. And, you know, when then he would get there and I would realize, oh, right, like, it's not a big help. Like,
and he's not as involved and doesn't understand that your son's behavior as much. Right. And
he would get frustrated more and that kind of thing. And he, you know, he was a good guy, a good dad. And he did deal with him okay. But yeah, it was just a lot. And and I think this happens for a lot of dads. From what I've read, like some books are literally like, you know, if your husband doesn't understand or doesn't, if or feels isolated, then just be patient. I'm like, how many? It's so crazy how many books are written
to
directed
care.
At the mom.
Yes.
Like,
yes.
It's kind of nuts.
Yeah, there should be like, an autism for dads. This.
Yeah.
Book.
But yeah, the books are like, no, we know who you are, who's reading this. Yeah, I don't know why that's a thing, but it seems like it really hits fathers in this different way. I don't know.
I mean, I don't want to make any assumptions because, you know, I don't want to sound like an asshole, but men...
No, I want to hear this. I'll probably agree.
Well, no, I just think that if there's anything to, you know, caveman and cavewoman, the woman is the caretaker and the man doesn't really understand really what to do and is often feels like an outsider, even if the child is typical.
Yeah.
It's weird because then it becomes the job of the woman to make sure the man feels okay and is comfortable.
That's what the dynamic became, was me trying to be like, make sure he was okay and make sure he was okay.
Yes.
Like, I need to not be someone's mom. Like, I need to not be the mom in every situation.
Can you tell me like a little bit about like where he was on the spectrum?
Mm-hmm. He, by many standards, would be considered high functioning. Mm-hmm. You can carry on a conversation with him, but you'll know immediately. Uh-huh. You know, he pretty much only wants to talk about cartoons and Disney and stuff like that. So, I mean, you know, he dresses himself. He's high functioning, except there's just a communication breakdown. Like, it's just, he only wants to talk about certain things. If you kind of ask him anything else, or you'll get this like blank stare, like, why are you interested in that? Why are we not talking about Disney?
Yeah. And is this now or back then?
This is now.
Yeah.
This is now.
What specifically about Disney is he interested in?
I don't know. Well, he loves villains. First, villains are like the best. They were the crap for like ever. That was all he cared about. And I grew up in Florida. So my sister and I, we grew up going to Disney and stuff. So we're like Disney kids. And so from the time he was little, we were taking him to Disney World.
Yeah.
And it's like his favorite place. And we'll go back after not being for a year and he can just like lead us to every little, his memory is like insane. Yeah. So I don't know, Disney, it's just always been his happy place, which sounds like a commercial, but literally, like, it's just, and we've had great experiences there. Like, he's had horrible, horrible, horrible meltdowns there, and Disney staff are incredible. I just want to like sing the praises of Disney staff, because I've never been anywhere, any other business, where I feel like he could have a meltdown and the staff doesn't want us to leave.
Oh, you know? Yeah, that's nice.
Like, Amanda was a Disney princess.
Were you?
Yeah.
Oh my god.
I loved working there.
Oh, which princess?
I was Cinderella and Sleeping Beauty and Ariel. Yeah.
That's incredible.
And we did have a lot of autistic people coming through, like all the time, sometimes in groups or, you know, so they don't specifically train you, but you're just, I think when you work there, you're just so used to dealing with all sorts of people. So it's just, like you're not really judging unless the kid comes up to you and is covered in chocolate and sticky ice cream and tries to kiss you.
And then gets it all over your dress.
Like, then security will escort them out. No, I'm just kidding.
And she also did it in Japan.
Oh my God.
Yeah, it was awesome.
That's Elijah's dream. He's always to go to Tokyo Disneyland. Can you go to Tokyo Disneyland?
I mean, honestly, you both would love it. It's it's the best. It's the best.
Yeah, of the parks?
I think so. Especially Tokyo Disney Sea, which is like their secondary park. It's super special.
Oh my God.
Yeah, that's like you at some point I hope that you guys all get to go because it's super good.
Yeah. He's been to Disneyland and Disney World. We've only been to the, you know, the ones in the United freaking States. So he has a dream to go to Tokyo Disneyland, Hong Kong Disneyland, Shanghai Disneyland, and Paris.
Aww.
He wants to hit them all.
He does. Before he dies, he wants to hit all
He'll
of them.
Get there.
And I'm like, okay, we're going to focus on the States right now because mommy can't afford an airline ticket to Tokyo.
But after this play...
Hey, yeah, because we all know theater is where the money is.
Especially in L.A.
Yes, ma'am. Oh, my God. Whole other subject.
Oh, my gosh.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Okay, so with his, when he has his breakdowns, is there anything that triggers them or does it just happen out of nowhere?
You know, for him, sometimes when he was younger, there were definitely triggers such as, I mean, that's in the play too. Any kind of siren was a big deal for him, like a fire truck or whatever. We'll just, that's the end
of
our
day. So like sensory, what's that called?
Like sensory overload. Like
yeah.
Sensory, yeah. Yeah, we have headphones, like shooter headphones, you know, noise canceling stuff.
Yeah.
So yeah, but he also what started being a real problem was that he would imagine things. Like so he would just imagine scenarios and then have a meltdown based on what was in his head. And so it's
like me and panic attacks.
Sort of. Yeah. He's like an anxious kid. And like now that he's doing better and we've gotten to know him as a person, like literally I felt like I didn't really get to know him until he was 12 and like in this therapy and medicated and what, and it was like, oh, there you are. Yeah. And now it's, I see it. I see just the basic anxiety. I have it. Like, I'm like, oh, you come by that real honestly. Like, I think of scenarios in my head all the time and lay awake at night. Like, why can't I sleep? And it just gets to him and he'll freak out. And then the autism is why he can't really control it. But yeah, it's great to actually find things in common. For years, it was like this little person that I just didn't understand, and now I actually see a lot of myself in him, and I see that the autism is just what makes it difficult for him to have those things.
Did you feel judgment from parents around you when, like, if he would have a breakdown in public and all that stuff? How did that affect you?
Definitely when he was younger, and then as he got older it got different. People looked scared. And he's a big kid now.
Yeah,
I mean, he's tall, he's like over 6 feet.
And, wow.
And yeah, so now that's a different thing. But yes, when he was younger, it was the worst, man. Like, you go to the grocery store and he's screaming and people are like looking at you like you're a crappy parent, you know, and it's like, thanks, guys. Like,
yeah. Well, you just have no idea.
Yeah. I feel like there's a lot more awareness now than there was then. But it's still, people are still shitty. I mean, like, you know, you just take it.
What do you want someone to do in that scenario? I think I'm asking because I guess I feel like I've been in a scenario where a kid is crying and the mom is just doing her thing or whatever. Mm-hmm. But I want to say, hey, it's okay. It's okay that your baby's doing this, or like, don't feel bad or whatever. But they don't want me to say that to them.
Actually, they do.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I would say they do. I mean, anything to show that you're okay, like yeah. that this is not infringing on your experience yeah. and because the guilt, again, it's just you're just full yeah. of like, God, I'm screwing up everyone's flying experience or whatever exactly. you're doing, you know. The times that have really touched me are when people will come up and just like squeeze my shoulder and be like, you're doing a great job.
Oh.
Or yeah. people will say, hey, can I do anything? Like, does he need anything? I can go get him a juice. I can go, you know, like that mm-hmm. kind of thing. So like, yeah, anything. Okay. And even sometimes when people just make eye contact and just kind of smile like, we see you, yeah. you know, like I've broken into tears because of that. Just yeah. that connection is like, okay. Everyone doesn't hate us, you know, yeah. and you're also defensive for your child, you know, like don't look at him like that, you know, so it's any kindness goes a long way.
And so with your husband on tour a lot, it kind of was like you were a single mom almost.
It was a lot like on the day to day. Yeah, it yeah. really did feel like that. And then after we divorced, actually, I was in kind of such bad shape at that point because yeah. of where Elijah was at.
Yeah,
that I was the one who moved out. And moved in with a friend. And so my ex quit the band. Mm-hmm. Actually, no, they fired him because it was a Christian band and he was getting a divorce.
Are you serious?
Yes, drama.
Wow, what? That's the Christian thing to do.
Right? I know. He has his own whole story, man.
That is crazy.
Do you guys get along now? Or I mean, not that you
fine.
Never.
We're fine. Yeah. We're fine.
Oh, so you were saying that you moved out.
Yes.
And you needed to, yeah, heal.
I moved in with a friend that was very close to home. And so I would still pick Elijah up from school and be over every day. And we were pretty much co-parenting and stuff until he, you know, met the person he started dating. And then mm-hmm. that was a problem. Mm-hmm. So that's where how that ended up. But so he got his taste of being the one to have to wake up every 2 hours at night with Elijah and yeah. all that. And actually, after about a month of that, he came to me and apologized for
life.
Not understanding. Yeah, for like the last many years where he was kind of judgy of how dirty the house was and kind of judgy. Like he'd come home and be like, and I'd be like, really? Like, so, but he apologized, but it was like, it was a little late, you know. Elijah lived mainly with him for like the last year and a half before he was admitted. And they actually moved to Louisiana. And very soon after that was when he was admitted. And so that was a whole other level of guilt where I was like, if he had stayed with me, like, would he have to be admitted right now? I was very anti-admit him to this place. Right. Like, I thought, just no way that we're there. It was obviously the right thing to do. Like, looking back, it was like, it's what needed to happen. But I just was like,
yeah,
I failed. Like, yeah. why did I let him go to, you know? So anyway.
So what did this place look like? What did they do with him while he was there? How long was he there?
He's still there.
Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah. So that's in Texas.
Mm-hmm. No. It's in Alexandria, Louisiana.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Yeah.
Tell me everything.
It's like 4.5
hours. I'll stop interrupting. Start talking and then let me jump in and attack you.
Yay. He's like 4.5 hours away from Dallas.
Okay.
So yeah, if Brad and I hadn't divorced and he hadn't moved to Louisiana, we probably never would have found this place. So it's one of those things where I'm like, everything happens for, I don't know how I feel about that, but like, this was a good thing.
So
that's how we found that place. And I'm sorry, what was your question?
So he lives there full time.
Yes, he lives there full time still. He can live there, they say, until they're not able to meet his needs anymore. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's indefinitely. So it's basically, there's a school and then there are dorms for like the lower functioning children. And then there are group homes for the higher functioning children. And so he lives in a home with like 7 other boys, and the homes are built specifically for this. So it's huge. He's got his own bedroom. He's got his own little bathroom. They've got these enormous dining rooms. It's lovely. It's a home. And he lives with these boys and has for years, and they're his brothers now, you know, like he calls them his brothers. And
are there any old men there? Or I guess it's not that old yet.
It's not. That's the thing. So when we admitted him, they said that he would age out at like 22. So we were like, okay, there's a deadline. Like, we have to figure out what's going to happen at 22.
Right.
Well, then a couple years ago, they changed the entire program, and they decided, because there were too many kids leaving who didn't have anywhere to go, mm-hmm. whose parents literally took them to St. Mary's and like never saw them again.
Oh my God.
Like, never. I was told that like 75% of the kids who go there, their parents just like disappear.
Wow.
So yeah, it's awful. So they were like, and these people are good people. And they're like, we're not willing to just like release them to the street.
Abandon them.
Yeah. So they changed the program. So now it's harder to get in. So yeah, there are people there who are like in their 30s. Wow. They had been kind of hanging on because they couldn't find them a place. So they just kept keeping them. And then they were like, okay, we need to change the system. If we're going to do that, then we need to change it. So.
Wow.
Yeah.
Does this all come out of your pocket?
No. Amazingly, this is like the miraculous part of it. Yes. All. Medicaid in Louisiana covers all of it.
Get the fuck out of here.
I mean, yeah, which that wouldn't happen in Texas. Like, it totally depends on what your state's like Medicaid package is or whatever.
Oh, God.
But yeah, they, all of it, literally all of it. Like, it's insane.
That's really amazing.
And that was weird too, right? Because like you bring your child to this place and not only are they there now 4.5 hours away, but like you literally don't have to buy them their tennis shoes anymore. You can, but like you don't have to. Like, they literally provide everything. Like, he has a laptop because they have a fund where each kid has like a savings account, and just stuff goes in little by little, and they can save up and they can buy. I mean, the whole program is amazing.
Oh my gosh.
And so it's wonderful, but also it was like you go from being mom to being like absolutely unnecessary.
Yeah.
You know, and it was just a real weird, but yeah, no, like it, I wish there was a better word for the word blessing, because
just,
but it is. I mean, it's a miracle to me that it's there.
Yeah. So after you dropped him off, that must have been so hard.
It was awful. I was and that's what the play takes place mainly right at the day after she admits him.
Uh-huh.
Because in real life, I had to go stay with my sister for 3 weeks in Portland because I wasn't allowed to see him for 3 weeks, and I thought I was going to go insane.
Wow.
So my sister was like, come with me. We're going to go to Portland. That's where she lived at the time. And I just tried very hard not to think about it. And that's where the play finds the character.
Wow.
Yeah. Oh. At a Renaissance fair.
Oh my God.
Because that was another thing. When I got back after that trip, I was in a real weird place, and I was like throwing myself into weird things. And I was like, I'm going to go on match.com. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm going to date everyone. And because I got married at like 19 and got, you know. So anyway, I went on match.com. And I met this guy that was a big Ren Faire guy. And I had dated my last...
In Portland?
No. Okay. This was after I got back. But it kind of got smushed together in the play as being in Portland.
Yes, yes.
But we didn't like hit it off romantically or whatever. But we started hanging out. And I was I was looking for someone to go to Ren Faires with, because the last person I dated... Anyway, I'm a dork. So he was like, I have this whole gang of people. We go together. We camp together. Like, come with us. So I did, which is something I never would have done before. Like, I just was like, yeah.
Well, you
I'll
couldn't
do whatever,
have.
Like,
yeah.
And I went and was an idiot, and you know, drank entire bottles of Evan Williams and like from the bottle. It was just insane. But these people really like took me. I think they saw this little hurting person and just really were loving and wonderful to me, and like, you know. And so the play takes place at a Renaissance fair and with some Rennies. And so she's constantly trying to engage and like be there and be present. And these memories from her past keep literally invading her space. And so then you'll see scenes that led her to that point.
Ooh. Yeah.
Does this freak you out? Like, I was thinking about this.
Yeah.
On the way
I mean,
here.
It held me back from making this decision to begin with. It's one of the things that I was worried about. Is there a genetic component?
Yeah.
Like, why does it happen? If it happens to me, will it be okay? Mm-hmm. And at a certain point, you just have to say, fuck it, right? Yep. I think.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's the right name, but like, I did have a genetic counselor tell me that she didn't think that that my niece's autism was a genetic thing. She had the cord wrapped around her neck in the womb for quite a while. So they think that she also had brain damage.
Okay.
But she also had like swollen adenoids and I don't remember what else. But when she was very like a newborn, her tongue was sick out of her mouth a lot. So she looked like something was going on.
Yeah.
But we just crossed our fingers. And my best friend's a pediatrician. And she came and she's like, no, she's fine. Don't worry. She's fine. But you don't have any idea at that age. And then you have to like wait and just wait and see. But there's that exists with everything.
Right.
I have another friend whose baby died of SIDS at 6 months. And that baby was healthy as an ox the night before I was there.
Oh,
like,
my God.
And she was at my house. So, yeah, I don't know. I just... I can't control everything.
Right.
No matter how hard I try. So I just gave up at some point and said, well, if that happens, then I'll figure it out.
Yeah.
Sweet. And that'll be the happiest little autistic kid on the planet.
That's right. It's true. Yeah. And autism looks different on every single person. I mean, that's the actual truth. I mean, that whole thing of if you've met one person with autism, you've met one person with autism. I've heard that a million times.
That's interesting.
True.
Yeah.
Very true.
Does your son know about the play?
No. No. In fact, he doesn't. He's never seen me on stage. Uh-huh. He's never. It feels like it would be confusing for him.
Yeah.
Just where he is. So, no, yeah. He doesn't. And I'm good with that.
Yeah. Yeah. And if he did know about it, I mean, who would he understand?
You know, I mean, I think many people on the spectrum would.
Yeah.
You know, I've met definitely people with autism who are very aware that they have autism and very aware of, you know, what they have to deal with and their behaviors and how to control them. And they can talk about that. Elijah just, he isn't at the functioning level where he can, like, talk about that. And so people on the spectrum, I mean, there will be people on the spectrum watching the show tonight, and I'm nervous.
Yeah.
I mean, this won't be the first time. There have been a few. There were a few in New York. It made me.
They have feedback for you?
They
after?
Did. And it was the best.
Aww.
Because it was good. Because it was good feedback. And they thanked me for the way he was presented and for, what was it? Like, they felt like he was respected as a character. And that meant so much to me because it is a lot of talking about him and what we do about that, you know? And so it's like, that was a fine line to walk for me. I didn't want him to be an issue, you know, like an issue and not a person.
This is just, you just said like a lot of talking about him. That's something that I've noticed, that like the person with autism is there in the room and everybody's talking about them the whole time. Mm-hmm. Like they don't understand or hear.
Right. It's a mistake.
It is.
I think
yeah.
Well, depending on the functioning level,
right?
You know, so when he was little, we did that a lot.
Yeah,
and I now wish we hadn't. Mm-hmm. I actually don't know how much of it he internalized, but I think some. I think, you know, now that I know him better, now I'm like, I'm sure he did internalize some of that, you know, and none of it was like negative, but like who needs to hear themselves being talked about like in third person, you know, like that's just, yeah, I think it happens a lot. And I think people should be careful.
Yeah, because then the child will see themselves in that way.
Yeah. And may not be able to express either how that, or even that they know that, or how it makes them feel. Yeah. It's just in there then. And it's like, yeah.
After that, Jessica asked me where I was in my process, and I filled them both in, that I had just come from the doctor, that I'd had that negative P test, that later on that day I would be getting the phone call about the blood work, that it probably wasn't likely, but there's still like a slim chance that I could be pregnant. And then I told them about my dilemma with the timing of IVF and the BabyQuest grant. And I told them what Hannah said in the car that morning. And she just looks at me and she goes, "Don't wait, Molly. Get your baby." And I was like, oh, fuck.
I agree. Because you have your parents helping you with the first round. So the options are either it doesn't work and then you'll still need the grant.
But then I would miss the window for the grant because I won't know if I'm pregnant or not.
I don't know. I just
do it.
I think just do it.
I feel same. Like that too.
You have the resources right now. You're getting help. Just do it. It will. The grant, who knows what's going to happen with that? And also, like, you can always communicate with them. And
yeah.
I think just do it.
Yeah.
Same.
Yeah, yep. I'm over it.
Yeah. Just
plus,
do
this
it.
Podcast is getting really boring.
I feel like we should have started with that.
No, I don't mean this episode.
Oh,
I meant the series is getting boring.
Oh, right.
Oh my God, I would never. Can you imagine? Amanda, this episode is so boring.
No, this was actually a great conversation.
Oh my God.
I thought it was really great. Yeah.
I'm sorry, I wasn't trying to be soft.
No, I get you.
Yeah, I say just go to IVF. You can't wait on other people and other things that are question marks.
Yeah, it's true.
I agree.
Okay. I mean, I like your input.
This life is short. I'm just...
Yeah. But then yesterday, in my podcast this week, I was like, well, what's a month or two? I'm like, I'm not in a rush. But like...
But you literally are.
You really kind of are, though.
You are like, in a rush.
In a rush, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Jessica Kavanaugh with a C. I know you.
Thank you, Molly with
an M. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right. That's right. It's so good. Thank you. Thank you so much for having me.
I can't wait to see your play.
Thank you.
Where can I see it again?
Theater 68 in North Hollywood.
S-I-B.
Onstage.com.
S-I-B on stage. Self-injurious behavior on stage. Mm-hmm. S-I-B onstage.com.
Yes.
When exactly is the play?
Okay, so we start previews tonight, the 30th of August, and mm-hmm. then we open officially next Friday, September 6th, and okay. we run through the 28th. Every weekend in September, cool. Friday, Saturday, 8 o'clock, Sunday, 2 p.m.
Friday, Saturday, 8 o'clock, Sunday, 2 p.m. Theater from 68. September 6th through...
The 28th.
The 28th.
Uh-huh.
Theater 68.
Yes, ma'am.
Self-injurious behavior. A portion of the money goes mm-hmm. to Autism Works Now. And there will be pie.
There will be pie.
Oh, I can't wait. I'm definitely coming.
Yay. Oh, my God. Please stick around and say hi.
Of course I will. I definitely will. All right. Thank you so much. Thank you for sharing that story with us.
Yeah, thank you.
Amanda, thank you.
Thanks, ladies.
Thanks, Amanda.
Of course, I didn't have my answer about IVF yet. I needed input from one more person. My friend of the podcast, Shelby Gale. You remember Shelby, the surrogate? Well, now she's 18 weeks pregnant. I gave her a call. I filled her in on where I'm at, where my head's at, what's going on. And I made her give me her 2 cents.
I mean, I'm just trying to figure out if I should wait and see if I can get the grant.
From my outside perspective, with you having had the person who started the grant on your podcast, I wonder if that would be like a conflict for them.
Exactly, yeah. I don't know if it's a conflict of interest or if it helps me.
Okay, I think if I were to have a strategy on this, and I agree with your friend from a couple weeks ago about your parents wanting to help you.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, you know, now that I'm a parent.
Mm-hmm. You're a parent.
No, it's like all I can think about is how I just want this baby to have the best life.
Yeah.
And just give it everything, you know, not like material things necessarily, but like just to see it thrive and be happy. Mm-hmm. And like children and people are the gift that keep giving. And so it's like your parents love you so much and they yeah. want you to be so happy. And it's like there is nothing better that they could ever invest in than your happiness, because your happiness is their happiness. They're giving you the money to make them happier too, mm-hmm. you know? But I totally get feeling like guilty about that. But what I would suggest doing is go for the IVF. They're going to be giving grants twice a year, right? Mm-hmm. Go for the IVF and see how that works out, you know, because it's like nothing's guaranteed. Although like I feel like I'm not the norm as far as like my IVF results, you know, like I don't know if it's the Texas water or what's going on down here, but it's like I'm not someone who is thinking that IVF isn't going to work for you the first time. Like, but the thing is I do think that if your parents give you the money and you do this IVF this first time and it works, you're not going to think about that money again, and neither of your parents for the rest of your lives. If it doesn't work, you have Baby Quest as a follow-up. You have it as a fail-safe, and I think that that's really important. From the strategic side, it's like, and also having like an IVF behind you and having invested into this, you know, all that you've invested with the IUI and the time, and then it's like you have some time from the podcast interview. It's like, I feel like that kind of sets you up more for success, because it's like you've invested more and they would take that into account, and then you might be more likely to get the grant.
Right. I'm leaning towards IVF.
Yeah.
I just don't know if it's frivolous and not taking the money seriously. I mean, I think I've accepted the guilt thing. I know my parents want to give this to me and do this for me. But then I just wonder if, like, going forward with IVF right now is irresponsible if there's a chance that I could have it all paid for in 2 months.
You know, there's always going to be a grant out there.
Mm-hmm, and that's like, true, too.
You can keep putting it off and putting it off. But at a certain point, just what is what is, and you have to just pull the trigger, you know? Yeah. And it's like every minute that you're waiting is a minute that you're like waiting for the thing that you want the most in life, you know?
Yeah.
Like you're just putting that off, and that's one less month you get to spend with your child.
Yeah, that's true. And I also look at you and I'm like, she started after me. And I'm like, if I had just gone straight to IVF, like I could be where you are right now.
Well, you trust your body though.
I know. And I don't understand why you don't trust your body, because you were pregnant twice.
Yeah, it's like I do in a way. It's like I do trust my body to carry other people's. I don't trust my eggs or something. I don't know. It's so bizarre. It's, I don't know. And like, I feel like I could fill up a whole therapy session on just that topic. I was just discussing that with someone else a couple days ago about why I skipped over IUI, because it's like, I'm not made of money. Like, I don't have the money. I'm in debt now. You know, it sucks, but it's like, I've been in debt a lot during my life, and it didn't come close to the amount of suck it felt to not be in control and to not have the baby that I had been waiting for my whole life, you know?
Yeah.
And I would have definitely started with IUI, and that was the plan, or even like at home insemination kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But, it was honestly when I got into the single mothers triers Facebook group that I was like, oh God, no, like I don't, cause I'm also,
you don't want to go through all of that.
I'm super impulsive, and it's like what I want now, and like judge me and it's right or it's wrong. But it's like, I just know that about myself, and my heart breaks a little bit just watching how long you've been in this journey and how long one of my friends here has been in this journey. And like, just trying to like put myself in that position and feeling that level of like disappointment for so many months in that compound. And it's like, at a certain extent, you're not really living your life to the fullest, you know, because it's like your life is just in waiting.
Yeah. I'm in a holding pattern.
Until you get these results, you know, that you're looking for. And I think the uncertainty too is like, it's like, I want so bad for all my friends to have this, because I feel like you're all so deserving, and like, you know, whether anyone's deserving, because I'm like, and I don't feel deserving, you know, I just don't trust anything. So I'm like, I'm going to get it.
Yeah.
Make it happen. I'm going to squeeze it from the universe.
Yes,
But I really like admire your patience and like your strength and your willingness to like really, I mean, you're really testing yourself to the limit, and you're going to know that like IVF was the right path for you.
Yeah.
The money aspect is huge. I mean, it really is such a huge part of the equation that I think a lot of people just kind of skim over. But it's like, we're talking about, I mean, even like in a traditional couple situation, this is like a life-changing amount of money, you know? And like some of these couples are doing it two or three or four times, and you know, and then beyond that, it doesn't stop. But it's like, that is definitely something to consider. But being on this end of it, it's like so worth it. It's like, no matter what you went through, when like when you're in it and you're feeling the pregnancy and you start feeling positive and thinking that you're going to move forward in it, all of a sudden, everything you went through doesn't feel like enough. You don't feel like you did enough, like the soul crushing time that you've spent, and you've invested literally everything emotionally and physically and financially. And you're like, man, I just don't feel like I did enough to be where I am, you know? And so I think like, I don't know, it's hard to try to tell someone like the direction that their life should go. But it's like, I want to see you pregnant so bad. I know like everyone who listens to your podcast, everyone who knows you wants you to be pregnant so bad. And it's like, what's the fastest way to get Molly pregnant? And like, that is doing IVF yesterday, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's like, also, I think what's kind of cool about IVF, which is a part that's like a blessing and a curse, is that you get to look at like the microscopic details of what's happening in you.
Yeah.
And like, you get to know what kind of what you need to tweak, you know? And it's like with IUI, you're kind of just putting the sperm in and being like, good luck, fellas, you know, and like, hope you catch a good egg. But you don't know anything about your eggs or like how many eggs were, I mean, they do the follicle measurements, but those are, you know, it's like they'll tell you your follicles are one thing and when they retrieve them, they're something completely different. Right. And you're like, oh, okay. So yeah, I think it's just like, it's kind of neat to take that out of the body and like you get this whole other appreciation and understanding for the process.
Yeah.
And from like a researcher, like journalist perspective and someone who has a podcast, I think it's like invaluable for your listeners for you to have to go through IVF. So we appreciate your sacrifice.
And it makes for a better podcast.
Well, yeah, I mean, no one could have predicted all of those switch turns. And like,
no,
it would have been a whole different podcast if you would have gotten pregnant on IUI number one, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think it's like, I mean, if there is a silver lining, it's that you're able to like teach people
that it's not fucking easy.
Yes. And it's not easy. And I think a lot of people overlook that. Like they think once the fertility clinic is involved that it's like a done deal. And I thought that and I was so wrong.
Yeah.
I mean, everybody just wants to see you pregnant at the end of the day. And I think all of our votes are for you just going into IVF, but really mostly everyone just wants you to be happy.
All right. Shelby, thanks for chatting.
I hope you get clarity and that you're like super stoked about whatever decision you make. You can't make a wrong one at this point. It's just a month.
Yeah.
And it's all up to fate anyway. So
yeah, yeah, yeah. I think I know what I'm going to do.
Okay.
You know. Excited. What? Yeah. I think. Shelby and I actually talked for almost 50 minutes, and that is actually going to be up on the Patreon as a special bonus episode. We talk all about her IVF experience after her miscarriage and about how she's coping with the stress of hitting all those stressful pregnancy milestones. Let's just say she has a little ultrasound addiction. On top of that, Shelby gives me some valuable advice on whether or not I should pick a different donor at the sperm bank given my donor's low sperm count last month. Still bitter about that. Check it out on patreon.com/spermcast for just a buck or two a month. Exclusive content, baby. All you could ever want. And don't forget, your patronage will not only help keep this podcast alive and thriving, it'll help with the cost of IVF. Should I need it? And I do. Because later on that afternoon, I did get my call from Nurse Julie over at the clinic, and she confirmed I am not pregnant. Surprise! But here's the good news. I'm okay, and I think that's because I took the pressure off myself during that 2-week wait, and I did my best to ignore it. I learned that obsessing over it doesn't help make a pregnancy come true. I also learned that ignoring it also doesn't make a pregnancy come true. And since I've tried everything in between, I can confidently say that there's nothing that I can do in my brain that will help give me control over the outcome of my pregnancy tests. So, what's next for me? You guessed it, IVF. Thanks to all the lovely ladies I talked to in this episode, plus my mom, I feel very confident that I can start IVF this week. Now I just have to wait for my darn period to come, and she is taking her sweet, sweet time. There is one thing that could change my decision to start IVF, and that would be if I went to see Dr. Kalin and he told me he thought I had a very good chance of getting that grant and that waiting another month or two would make no difference to my fertility. But even then, I don't know. I don't want to wait, but I'll consider it, if that's what he says, which I don't think he will. Now go to the website for self-injurious behavior and buy those tickets, sibonstage.com. Thank you, Jessica Kavanaugh, for taking time away from rehearsals to come have that interview with me and Amanda. Amanda, thank you for being so supportive and wonderful. Hannah and Shelby, thank you too for being supportive and giving me such great advice. I love all you ladies so much. Go to patreon.com/spermcast if you want to become a Patreon subscriber. This week, you can find that bonus episode with Shelby Gale up there. You'll also be able to see my ultrasound with Dr. Kalin this week and see what the plan's going to be. Hopefully, I'll be shoving some needles into my gut very, very soon. Oh, and a lot of you have been wondering about what happened to that guy I went for a walk with around the lake. You know, the aerospace engineer who wanted to have my babies? Well, I'll tell the whole story on my Patreon. Yeah, that's right. This week, I'll put up a whole thing about it. I'll tell you everything. Want to reach me? Email me at spermcast@gmail.com. Call or text at 323-741-1818. Find me on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook at Spermcast. Go to my website, spermcastpod.com. And what else? Have a great day. I love you. Goodbye.
He could be bald and bearded, short or tall, funny, smart, love basketball, from gay to straight, black to white, tiny eyes with an underbite, I just need sperm, Spermcast.
An Erios production.
Powered by Acast.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.